You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Computers may not forget names, but they can and do discriminate. Algorithms and artificial intelligence are playing ever larger roles in our daily lives, from Google searches and Facebook feeds to driving cars and sentencing convicted criminals. And it's increasingly clear that the decisions algorithms make are often biased. My next guest is working to fix that. Irene Chen is a graduate student in the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, where her research focuses on machine learning and its implications for things like healthcare and fairness. Irene, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be on.
We often say that algorithms are biased, but it's not necessarily the algorithms themselves. It's that they're learning bias. Where are they learning that bias from?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that we looked at in our research is that sometimes when you train it on a data set, the data set itself might not be biased specifically, but it might not be representing people as well or as equally across different groups. And then when you train an algorithm on that data set, that kind of discrepancy can perpetuate through into the predictions that they make.
You raise one particularly interesting example, which is that computer algorithms are less accurate in their predictions about who will live or die in an intensive care unit. They're less accurate for their predictions regarding Asians. Why is that?
So I was very shocked to find this. So our lab focuses on healthcare. And when I was training this algorithm to predict ICU mortality, I was very surprised to find out that the Asian population wasn't having a higher error than the rest of the population. And as an Asian American myself, I thought, you know, I'm not biased. I'm not trying to make this discriminatory. What's going on here? So a lot of the prior machine learning and fairness research has looked at the mathematical model. How can we make the math algorithm itself less biased? But as it turns out, the data itself can also be pretty biased as well. So in this data set specifically, we were looking at the whole data set had about 3% Asians compared to maybe, say, like the white patients, and they were about 50 to 60% of the whole data set.
So specifically, how did the algorithm's predictions about the Asian population, how are they different from the predictions about others?
We have algorithms currently deployed in hospitals that predict whether or not someone will die in the ICU. And what clinicians end up doing is they use this risk assessment to prioritize treatment, to sort of decide where they're going to give their attention and where they're going to give their resources. And if we have a patient, let's say an Asian patient versus a white patient, the algorithm might indeed say that the Asian patient is not going to die, and then the hospital will not allocate resources to them. But as a result, because the algorithm was wrong, the Asian patient might have been extremely high risk and end up dying due to the lack of resources there. And this is not something that we observe happening nearly as often for the white population because the error rates are much lower there.
So there's just a numerical underrepresentation of Asians, but you also found that the discriminatory effect or the lower accuracy was specific to different kinds of health outcomes. Is that because, you know, you've got, if only 3% of your data set is from the Asian population, then you've got an even lower percent who, say, are Asians who suffered cardiac arrest and are in an ICU. And so you just literally don't have the numbers there to make the predictions?
Yeah. One of the great things about machine learning and big data these days is that with a lot of data, we can make very accurate predictions. If you don't have that much data, if you're only 3% of the data set, it's really hard for an algorithm to learn what's going on with you, what's going on with your group compared to another group. So one of the tools we looked at then is try to estimate how much adding more data would help. If we could figure out, if you just got 2,000 more data points, we estimate that you would probably get this much more fairness. You would get this much more increase in accuracy for your underrepresented group. And that was a really exciting result to find.
Irene Chen, you are certainly not the first to say that the data being used to train AI can be biased. But as you were just alluding to, this tool that you're now building to help specifically diagnose and then also treat, if we use medical terminology, the problems in these data sets. I mean, how does that actually work? How do you use, I guess, one mathematical model to evaluate these other algorithms and learning processes?
Right. So once we found we had a discriminatory algorithm on our hands, we thought of what are the different reasons that this might be more biased. So one reason is that, as we mentioned, there's an underrepresented group. We don't know enough about that group. So if only we had more data about that group, that would be great. But other times, even more data wouldn't necessarily help. Maybe the different types of data that we're collecting aren't very useful for this group. So in the medical setting, maybe, oh, we forgot to collect blood pressure. And if we just collected blood pressure, we would have all this more information about to be able to diagnose this group for the different conditions. So what our research sort of focused on is then how to estimate whether or not more data would be helpful or more types of data would be helpful, or if in fact it is the mathematics of the mathematical model that is creating these skewed results.
Whether the algorithm itself is the root cause.
Exactly, exactly. And so running these experiments, we could say, well, based on what we do know about how our algorithm performs under this amount of data and maybe a little bit less data, we can start to draw this line and extend it out and say, if we had more data, this is how much we would estimate. And then similarly, for different types of data, we could say, well, we know this much from based on these different types of data. What are the groups for which our predictions are the least accurate? And are there variables out there? Are there different types of data that we could collect that would specifically address that subpopulation that is being particularly affected and is really not being predicted as well, not served as well by our algorithms?
But how do you ask and answer these questions without actually going out and getting more data or more different types of data and running them through the algorithm? How do you predict what the algorithm is going to do with data that you don't yet have in hand?
It's a hard question. Obviously, we would love to be able to go out and do different experiments where we collect data by ourselves and sort of add it into the algorithm and see what happens. The best thing we can do without actually going out into the world is make this assumption that any data that we currently have and any data that we would have in the future are from the same, we call it the same distribution. So they're sort of the same type of patient. And in the medical setting, that's actually a reasonable assumption, because a lot of the times the limiting agent is the clinician doesn't want to label it, or it's hard to get different providers to give us the data. But in the end, it'll be the same type of patients, same population of patients that we'll be collecting in the end.
Right, if you had more of the same.
Exactly, of the same. And that's the big assumption. But as I mentioned, in healthcare, it's reasonable. Although in other areas, maybe perhaps criminal justice or even self-driving cars, if you go into a different environment, a different type of driving situation, you wouldn't necessarily make that assumption.
As you think about using these kind of tools to diagnose bias in algorithms more broadly, if this kind of testing were to become more standard, the implication is that potentially this isn't something that could just stay in this simulation mode in the lab. You would actually need to go out and get more data or more different kinds of data. Is this really kind of shifting our focus for fixing algorithms from looking at the algorithms to looking at where and how we collect data? I mean, are we really talking about changing maybe the healthcare system or, you know, these other bigger data collection systems instead of just changing how we develop algorithms?
Oh, we certainly hope so. I think the data has truly been an underlooked part of this fairness in machine learning research. The data can really start to skew all kinds of predictions. Even the best mathematical models are no match to a biased data set. You cannot correct for something that you do not know. And if you only see a sample of the population that is not represented or is being underrepresented compared to other groups, there is no mathematical model that could fix that. And so the hope is that as different institutions start to roll out more algorithms in all kinds of different ways, that they start to take more attention to what's going on in their data sets and collecting them as we need to.
I can imagine that some would respond to hearing about the problems with algorithms and with the data sets used to train them, all of the possible pitfalls and the possible resulting bias, and just say, why are we even bothering going down this path? What are the benefits that you see? What is your vision for how artificial intelligence and machine learning could be deployed in healthcare that makes it worth the potential risks?
That's a really interesting point. I think right now we're just at a really exciting time for healthcare data, where there's so much electronic healthcare data available. And it seems almost irresponsible not to take a look and see how could we try to improve patient care? How could we predict treatment effects better? How could we handle chronic conditions in a more effective way? Right now, the results that we've shown from healthcare algorithms are so powerful that we really do need to see how we could implement those carefully, safely, robustly, and fairly.
This research that you're doing as a developer of algorithms trying to figure out how to make the algorithms more fair, do you think that represents a shift? I mean, a lot of the attention on the bias inherent in or produced by algorithms has come kind of from outside analysts or outside observers saying, hey, there's a real problem here that you guys need to fix. This is you saying, this is a problem that we need to fix. Do you see a shift in the field toward more attention to this and more effort going into making algorithms better?
Absolutely. The work that we're discussing will be presented at the largest machine learning conference in December. It's called Neural Information Processing Systems, or NeurIPS for short. It's been astounding in the last few years seeing the explosion of machine learning researchers who are interested in this field and want to push the field forward. I think there was a tendency before to say, well, our work doesn't really have that. We are not concerned with the social impact, or it's not our fault if the algorithms end up being different than we expect. And that is no longer an acceptable answer. We are completely responsible. We are making these algorithms. We are helping them grow and scale and be deployed. And so it is absolutely our responsibility to think carefully about how that might be.
Irene Chen is a graduate student in the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab. Her research focuses on machine learning in healthcare and making algorithms more fair. Irene, thanks for talking with us.
All right. Thank you so much.
Up next, why we itch. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.